Esto de lunes a jueves.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry!
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own voice buried in cheers and applause? I think not. Everybody's getting ready for something, aren't they? Seems like we spend half our lives in preparation. Study for the test, get ready for the marathon, the offsite, vacation, the new job, the wedding, the move. Get ready for retirement or the coming financial collapse. William Devane wants us to buy gold, not some paper fund, the real thing. Bullion or maple leaves or Krugerrands, something you can hold in your hand or stuff in a safe, something to trade with when paper currency isn't worth the paper it's printed on. Some are getting ready for Teotwaki. Sounds like the name of some pointy Polynesian chick, doesn't it? But it's not. It's an acronym for the end of the world as we know it. Teotwaki. More optimistic types prefer the more compact but vowel-deprived acronym, SHTIF. That's shit hits the fan. Why? Well, because lots of people think some really nasty shit is coming down, that the end is near. Way back in 1947, some guys who claimed to have worked on the atomic bomb, some guys who supposedly knew how to calibrate destruction, came up with a disturbing concept. The doomsday clock. The doomsday clock. That's right. And at the start of the Cold War, when nuclear Armageddon was looming large, they figured the clock was set at about 3 minutes to midnight. Now, how they arrived at that time was never divulged. Then 44 years later, in 1991, Russia was on its ass, so they cranked the big hand back to 17 minutes before midnight, and the world relaxed a little. Now, they just reset the damn thing at 2.5 minutes to midnight. 2.5 minutes! 2.5 minutes. To a dystopian nightmare, a monochromatic, eternal twilight of throat-searing, thick, gray smoke roiling with irradiated particles, an unceasing drizzle of acid rain over a burning cityscape of broken concrete and twisted steel, one vast, smoldering, no-go zone where gunfire echoes through canyons of shattered glass towers as warring gangs fight it out for the dwindling scraps necessary for survival. Food, water, and ammunition. Corpses litter the asphalt as rats and vultures feast upon them. Fortunes in U.S. currency blow through the rubble-strewn streets and gather in corners, drifts of worthless money. Cries of the sick and dying are quickly muffled by their companions. As the food supplies diminish, cannibalism rages. 21st century mankind, with all its technological majesty, is self-destructing with the original form of class warfare. Hunters and prey. 2.5 minutes, now playing at a theater near you. Would you see that movie? I might. Ah, but that could never happen, right? Just some crazy sci-fi nonsense. Because we're better than that, aren't we? We're civilized, right? Well, it has happened. And I was witness to a small but no less chilling real-life episode of Shit Hits the Fan. And I'll circle back to that experience a little later. Our so-called civilization is tenuous at best. You don't have to go poking very far through history to validate that idea. Teotwaki has already happened. Locally, regionally, if not the entire planet.
World Wars I and II, Nazi Germany, Soviet Russia, and Mao's purges in China killed well into the hundreds of millions. There are those that believe the actual global Teotihuacan has happened many times. Hindu cosmology says the universe is cyclically created and destroyed. There's nothing new about preppers. The original one was named Noah. But he wasn't operating on a hunch or reading tea leaves or quarterly reports or social media. He got his intel straight from the foreman, didn't he? Over the years, preppers have taken on a persona, a stereotype. Mostly blue-collar, right-wing, C&D county, rural, F-150 driving, Duck Dynasty watching, camo wearing NRA men with a rifle rack in the rear window, a case of PBR in the back, and Toby Keith on the stereo. And often, those guys are mocked, jeered as nutcases. They call them the Danger Rangers. Like most stereotypes, it's bullshit. I know of several Hollywood movie types who've quietly bought up big parcels of land in the Eastern Sierras. For what? These guys don't hunt and they don't fish. They barely wipe their own asses. But they do believe in covering all bets. And now the world is surprised, shocked, because the Silicon Valley billionaires are copying guys they've mocked for years, the preppers. The New Yorker magazine has a story on the tech preppers, billionaire digital danger rangers. And they, with their limitless resources, have ratcheted prepping to another level. And the other big-time, big-budget preppers, East Coast hedge fund managers, they've made billions. Now that they've hedged their finances, they want to hedge their lives. Maybe it's a guy thing, is it? To be ready for calamity? The ladies don't seem to be as into it as we are. But that runs true to form, no? Women seem to be okay with things of limited use and lifespan, clothing and shoes that get worn once or twice and are thrown out. Guys want shit to last forever. Guys built the Sphinx and the pyramids. Chicks are okay with a nice flower arrangement. So what drives the male obsession with prepping for the end of the world? Or at least, shit hits the fan. Or another big one these days, a civil war. And why is it more prevalent now than ever before? Is the so-called threat level higher? We've got all kinds of threat levels. The bureaucracy of Homeland Insecurity came up with a preschool crayon box of color codes for threat levels, didn't they? It ran from a cool forest green for low level, one phasing into shades of red and orange, guarded, elevated, high, and severe. Severe is in a weird Victoria's Secret lingerie hot pink. Wouldn't that word look fetching, stenciled across a pair of tight silk panties on Adriana Lima's caboose? Severe indeed. Severely pointy. Should we have a pointy pageant here at the dojo? I'm beginning to think so. At least an online poll. Determine who are the pointiest chicks in the galaxy. And send the winner some type of trophy. But the color-coded threat level is meaningless because terror threats now come and go like skirt lengths and smartphone models. We've actually become somewhat inured to them, haven't we? They're beginning to blend together, maybe lost their significance. It's like when you have an earthquake. After weeks of aftershocks, you have trouble distinguishing them from the one that started it all. How much of this end-of-world's anxiety is real, and how much is imagined, and how much is conjured up by guys with a need, a palpable longing for the ultimate challenge? And what do I mean by that? 100 years ago, men could find adventure in a career. And they still can, but it's a lot tougher. Take some 200-pound dude in his early 20s just hitting the zenith of his physical abilities. Where was that guy a century ago? He might have been a roughneck in an oil field, or Maybe he was a ranch hand on some vast tract of land in Wyoming. One day he's roping calves, the next he's plinking coyotes from horseback. Or maybe working on the railroad, or on a whaler throwing harpoons. What's that big, strong dude doing for a living now? He's chained to a fucking keyboard in a cubicle somewhere with a headset. All day long. Because we have a keyboard economy now, don't we? No wonder we want a zombie apocalypse. Look at the military recruitment posters. Used to be guys slapping the breech shut on howitzers or repelling from UEs into enemy territory. High adventure, baby. No need for testosterone supplements. No need for a fitness center membership. No need for concern about obesity. There were no fitness centers 100 years ago. They were called gyms, and they were for prize fighters and rich guys who knew they were getting soft. Most people got all the exercise they needed just doing their jobs. Now the army posters say, "Join the army," and show a guy or a girl in a headset hunched over a fucking keyboard. They should rewrite that old song, "I've been working on the railroad," to "I've been working on the keyboard." It was called man's work. What the fuck ever happened to man's work? When a man could get all the adventure he needed on the job. Now you want adventure? You gotta buy it. And store-bought adventure never measures up. It's packaged, programmed, and it's artificial. Interesting documentary on Netflix about James Arthur Ray. He was kind of a Tony Robbins wannabe. And that's another 20th and 21st century construct, isn't it? The self-help industry, which is now at over $10 billion. People looking for meaning in their lives. Middle-aged adults asking Tony or Deepak or James Arthur Ray, "What should I be when I grow up? How do I get RLS? No, not restless leg syndrome. That's rich, laid, and slim. That's the real RLS we're all after, isn't it? Back to James Arthur Ray. His name was headline news in 2009 when three of his followers were baked to death in a sweat lodge in the Arizona desert. Here's a hard fact for self-help seekers. When we're running for our lives or wondering where our next meal is coming from, we don't have the time or the need to find meaning in our lives. And Tony and those other guys are hip to that fact. So what do? They manufacture situations for their clients to give them a nice, safe taste of what life used to be like when every day was a struggle for survival. And they package their programs to subtly give participants an impression that they are somehow getting back to their primordial essence. Spiritual warriors, James Arthur Ray called them. Not priests, not shamans, not leaders. He called them warriors. People haven't changed a bit since the dawn of time, and they never will. And our DNA is coded for daily survival. Ergo, skyrocketing obesity, heart disease, and so on. Man was not created to sit on his ass and tap a fucking keyboard. It's that simple. So the self-help guys say, "Here, grab this zip line and swing safely through the trees like Tarzan, or fall backwards off a deer stand and trust your buddy to catch you like in a mosh pit in the forest. Walk barefoot across hot coals," which is an easy trick that goes back thousands of years in India. You're actually walking on cold ashes, a thick enough layer to protect your feet from the coals below. But it looks really dangerous, especially at night. And then the guru says, "Look, you just swung on a zip line or walked on coals. Now you can go back to your job and become a master of the universe." But it doesn't happen that way, does it? The Teotihuacan scenarios are limitless. War, pestilence, pandemics, civil war, meteor strike, galactic entropy. There are many ways to end the world. Seems serious preppers fall into three basic categories. mostly driven by budget. The ones we know and love? Guys who want to get off the grid and stay off. They figure they've had enough hands-on experience with hunting, farming, machinery, and weapons to hack it on their own. Next up are the guys who are maybe not so handy, so they want to buy into a prepackaged post-apocalyptic plan community. And so can you. For only 3 million American, you can live in an old missile silo in beautiful Wichita, Kansas. Welcome to the Survival Condo Project, a lifestyle community where every day will be pretty much like the day before. You'll wake up in your concrete tube, eat a nutritious freeze-dried soy breakfast, luxuriate in a 3-minute shower of recycled water, and then just take your pick of video fishing or video skiing, video hiking, video surfing, or video cycling. When you're ready to work up an appetite for lunch, select the surface camera video screen and see what's going on topside. You might see wildlife like a bony coyote puking up an irradiated rat carcass. Maybe a few remaining humans with their tongues swollen like balloons and eyes bulging out, clawing at the entry hatch with their dying breaths. The third and top level of preppers, those hedge fund guys, are now buying up most of New Zealand. It's an island nation, right, on the other side of the world from, well, just from just about everyone and everything. They call it the doom boom. When I was a kid, there was a kick-ass ad campaign for Miller Beer. It was called Miller Time. It had all these beauty shots of guys coming off their jobs, fishing trawlers or oil fields, construction sites at sunset. Work was done, man's work. And now it was time to throw back a few with your pals. And there was a subtext to those commercials, unspoken but clearly understood. These guys were saying, hey, today we took 3 tons of tuna, or laid 35 miles of cable, or fenced the lower 40. Accomplishment, achievement, man's work. What do we get to say after a hard day at work now? I helped 37 customers resolve their billing issues. And on the way home from work, it's an hour at the gym to try to remember we are indeed made of bone and muscle, and forget the beer. Let's just have a soy latte because there's a sobriety checkpoint on every corner. We are less free than any time in our history. At last count, there's about 5,000 federal criminal laws. 20,000 laws governing the use and ownership of guns alone. And another couple hundred thousand regulations that could be enforced criminally. Moses gave us only 10 laws. And they pretty well covered things for several thousand years. The reason Walking Dead and so on and prepping are so popular is that deep down, many guys are actually hoping for Teotihuacan. Mankind is now so hamstrung, enslaved even by rules and regulations and government oversight, guys are kind of praying for doomsday, if for no other reason than it means instantaneous freedom, an opportunity to truly self-determine again, to reboot the planetary hard drive. Every minute of every day, you're told what to do, when to do it, how to do it, how many times to do it, and there's a camera or a cop or some government agency to make sure you are compliant. And deep in the heart of Prepland, which is anywhere USA, there's a growing group of people who are kind of hoping that shit hits the fan. And who can blame them? You stick a gas nozzle in your car, you're on security camera, and as you're paying your 25% per gallon in taxes, you're reading one command after another, all placed there by some government wonk. Because we all just can't figure out how to stick a nozzle in a filler cap and squeeze the handle, can we? We need instruction on that. And one of the big commands is, do not top off tank. I always top off the tank, and so can you. Just pull that nozzle out for a second and shove it back in. Fakes out their shitty sensors. Last week I told you about Marvin, my old neighbor with the somewhat pointy wife and his dog Roscoe, who wound up being spread like mayonnaise all over the street from a pack of coyotes, after he'd been warned about the predators. I recall another incident that demonstrated Marvin's intellectual prowess. A Filipino friend of mine brought me a souvenir from his hometown in the islands. It was a wild-looking knife. The handle is some kind of bone, and the blade is wavy. It's a ceremonial dagger. Looks cool as hell. So one night, Marv's at my house having a beer, and he picks up the knife off the bookshelf, pulls it out of the scabbard, and says, "Whew, is this thing legal?" "Why wouldn't it be, Marv?" "Well, it's only made for one thing," he answered. "What's that, Marv?" "Well, killing people." So I asked him about that big rack of knives his wife kept on the kitchen counter, many of which dwarfed my little Filipino ceremonial dagger. "Are your kitchen carving knives legal, Marv?" "Of course." "But couldn't you kill someone with them?" I could almost hear the gears grinding in his skull as he tried to figure this out. Marv was also very anti-Second Amendment, but that's for another bonus episode. We're surrounded by Marvins, aren't we? Highly functional automatons, men and women who sleepwalk through life and stop mouth-breathing only long enough to say yes when some authority figure gives them a command. People who love to comply, who love to make sure every fucking thing they do is approved of and endorsed and certified and correct and obedient. Maybe it's just time for Teotihuacan. A long time ago, Henry David Thoreau wrote, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation." That was then. Now, many men lead the life of a veal, an animal confined to a form-fitting box until it's ready for slaughter. But that's not for any member of the Take No Shit Dojo. So what's the basic prepper protocol for survival? Well, supplies of food, water, medicine, fuel, a defensible position, and weapons. Weapons that go bang. And while we're mentioning weaponry, let me give you the biggest ha-ha quotation I've read in years. This is from that magazine article I mentioned earlier. A guy named Marvin Liao, no, not my Marvin, some other Marvin, a former Yahoo executive, decided that his caches of water and food were not enough. He said, quote, "What if someone comes and takes this? I don't have guns, but I have a lot of other weaponry. I took classes in archery." So beside weaponry, you're going to need food and water, of course, canned with a long storage life. Plenty of commercial outfits say their food lasts 25 years. You're going to need fuel, and a little power generator would be nice, right? Hondas are the best. You can get cheaper ones that run for a few hundred hours and burn out. But the best thing about Hondas is their longevity and near silence. You don't want to advertise to the zombies that you have electric power. Oh, but gasoline degrades, even after only a few months. If it's stale when you use it, it'll gum up a motor. They make some chemical to extend that life a bit, but then what? Oh, and after only a day or two of dried food, you're going to get sick of it. Might be a good idea to have a little camp stove and some Sterno, because cold soup sucks. And don't forget plenty of toilet paper and big plastic garbage bags. There won't be any trash pickup for a while, so you'll be making garbage, and the rats are going to want to be your friends. Of course, loads of batteries and flashlights, and a good water filter, the kind that can even make drinking out of a bird bath safe. And lastly, the weapons. Ah, the fun part, right? Now, there are lots of guys who can offer you way more expert opinions than I, but I'll tell you what works for me. Many people think a shotgun is your best option. It's not. First, there's a common misconception that shotguns need not be aimed, that they throw a big circle of shot like a garden hose. Not true. The pattern of shot thrown by a shotgun is called a shot string, and for good reason. It's more like shooting a chain or a necklace, and it can be a fairly tight pattern at that. Also, as any martial artist will tell you, the bigger the weapon, the easier it is to take away from you. You are infinitely more lethal wielding a 4-inch dagger than a machete. Same principles apply with a gun. It's a lot easier to take a shotgun off someone than a handgun. What's the best handgun for home defense? A revolver, not a semi-automatic. It doesn't look as cool as a semi-auto, and you don't get that cinematic audio thrill of racking the slide on a semi. But in a real life or death situation, a revolver is the far better choice. There's no safety on a revolver. There's no slide to rack to put around in the chamber. There's no magazine to insert. A loaded revolver is a hot gun. You pick it up, pull the trigger, and bang, mission accomplished. Does it have the capacity of a semi-auto? No. But at 3 a.m, when you're bleary-eyed and naked and vulnerable, you don't need high capacity. You need instantaneous boom. Smith & Wesson makes a perfect little .38 with built-in laser sights. They function the moment you pick it up. So in a dark room, all you need do is dot the intruder. If it's Teotwaki, a concealable gun like that could be your best friend. A lot of people like AR-15s. Okay, but not so versatile. Now's where you want your shotgun. And there's only one choice, a pump action. The Marines still use them all over the world. And no pistol grip nonsense. They look cool for the Terminator, but that's Hollywood horseshit. You need a stock you can brace in your shoulder. 12 gauges have plenty of recoil, and hanging on to your pistol grip diminishes your effectiveness. Double barrels also look cool and can be sawed off, but who needs to reload after only 2 shots? Then there's autoloaders. They're nice, but as with any semi-auto, they're more prone to jamming. The versatility of a shotgun is great because it can chamber birdshot, lethal only at close range, or buckshot, very lethal at a greater range, or a deer slug, lethal at considerable range. So if you have to own only one long gun, a pump shotgun is a very versatile choice. So what are the actual odds of Teotwaki? Who knows? But as I mentioned earlier, I once had a little taste of shit hits the fan. I was living right here in Los Angeles in 1992 when an unpopular verdict turned the city into smoke and ashes in a matter of hours. The so-called journalists and assbag politicians called it civil unrest. Don't you love that? As if the entire city had insomnia. It was a riot. It went on for days, and those who call it otherwise are dishonest assholes. It was surreal. And the refrain from everyone was, how could this happen? Well, it did. On the second night, a pal of mine who was a second unit director called me. Hey, Larry, you want to take a copter ride? Yeah, if it'll go as far as Maui. He was renting a chopper and pilot and taking an Ariflex with him. He was going to fly around L.A. at night, grabbing footage that he could sell to studios later on when they were doing apocalypse movies. Is that copter a Blackhawk, I asked? No? Well, I'll pass. He did get some magnificent footage. You've probably seen some of it. For most of a week, I drove to work with a loaded pistol on the car seat. Lots of people were pulled from their cars and beaten senseless. From my office, I could hear constant gunfire and look out on a city in flames. For a while, no air traffic could get in or out because some commercial planes were drawing gunfire. To look over the city, you would think it had been bombed. Plumes of smoke everywhere. One high-ranking cop in a TV news report actually said this, and this is a near-verbatim quotation. Police response is now north of 8 hours, folks, so you're on your own. Let that statement sink in. And then mock the preppers and the gun owners. There's an old adage that says civilization is only 3 missed meals from anarchy. Lucky at the time of the LA riots, food was never in short supply. But that's when Sir Walter Raleigh manners go out the window and things get really ugly. Fortunately for Los Angeles, things eventually settled down and got back to normal. And so that's the style of prepping most of us can and should do, enough to tide us over for a short-term siege. It's a little like somebody spotting you when weightlifting. Sometimes just a little bit of weight taken off is all you need to help you make it. Have supplies for a week or two, maybe a month at the outside, because if things go sideways and stay that way for months or years, I doubt any missile silo in Wichita or New Zealand fortress will be enough to keep the marauders at bay. While the odds of Teotihuacan and shit hits the fan are a bit remote, and since this is the Take No Shit Dojo, that includes all varieties of shit, especially bullshit. There's a trending video of the doomsday clock prognosticators on YouTube, and they have all the credibility of SpongeBob SquarePants. There's some whiny broad giving this speech as a couple of doddering goons hold up a poster that looks like a preschool art project. What's their 2.5 minute till midnight based on? Nothing. Just an opinion they pulled out of their asses. Same as it was back in 1947, when their phony progenitors were trying to terrify America into believing we are perched on the precipice of nuclear holocaust. It was bullshit then, and it's bullshit now. One time at Tony Spumante's, we were having a couple of drinks, watching the news. Tony was very up on current events. There were protesters on TV, holding posters of mushroom clouds and chanting, "Disarm now." I asked Tony what he thought of the whole idea. He lit up a cool and took a big drag. You know what their real message is? Capitulation or annihilation. Fucking commies. Everybody gets their own personal doomsday, and these assholes want to make it a group activity like everything else. They probably all take a shit together. Tony had spoken. That was good enough for me. Doomsday is remote, but the odds of you facing another type of peril are way, way higher. You've got a 1 in 5 chance of experiencing a home invasion in your lifetime. Imagine that. Well, I don't have to. I already had one, and I was damn glad I owned a firearm. But that's a story I'll reserve for a bonus episode and brown belt level Patreonies. I'll tell you how it happened and what the outcome was and delve a little deeper into the whole gun controversy. And speaking of Patreon, we're going to post a new goal for the show. How's about we grab the leather chairs, some Johnny Red, throw a few logs on the fire, and meet in person? I'm thinking about a live show not too far down the road. It would be great to meet everybody. If it goes well here in L.A., maybe we can put together a Take No Shit tour. Maybe we can even make it happen before Teotihuacan. That's about it, everybody. Thanks again for stopping by the Take No Shit Dojo, right here at the crossroads of madness and enlightenment. See you next time, and remember, take no shit. Welcome to the jungle.